590. The Fan.
Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Happy Baby Friday, everybody. Baby Friday. If you're Haley, real Friday in terms of your early morning wake-ups. Mm-hmm. And you got another job, but this is it for you. You're 2 hours out. Congrats.
Thank you.
You're still going to watch the Blue Jays like a pro? You get a little daytime viewing today?
Mm-hmm. I will still watch the Blue Jays.
Oh, yeah, of course.
September.
But you don't have to come on in the morning and talk about
it. No, I don't have to. There's a different way of watching.
You get to watch baseball. As a fan at 3
like,
p.m.?
I can just sit there and watch. I can get up. I can get a snack. I can walk about my apartment. Mm-hmm. I don't have to be like, oh, did I miss something? Should I have written that down? Should I have taken a mental note of something that just happened? I don't have to think critically. I can just sit there.
Somebody does the opposite. Caitlin McGrath, Blue Jays reporter at The Athletic, joins us now. Good morning, Caitlin.
Good morning. I will say I eat a lot of snacks when I'm watching Blue Jays
okay,
at the stadium.
You don't have
I mean, that's
popcorn.
Good.
Yeah, you
what's
can do
the
both.
Snack situation at?
There's a lot of snacks. There's, like, a lot of popcorn. They bring pizza around, like, the sixth or seventh inning, I think. You got to be careful, though, because, like, that's a lot of late-night pizza. I got to respect myself.
Yeah. My first NHL season on the Sens beat, I had to start... Like, seriously, like, my mental game was, I had to dial it in to be like, do not get popcorn before the anthems
popcorn
even start.
Popcorn can't be that. I eat popcorn.
Dude, it's so salty.
Oh, okay. Well.
And I would, like, eat so much of it. Like, I would eat a bag of popcorn before the game would even start. And I'd be like, okay, wait till intermission. Dial
That's
it back.
That's my snack of choice.
I'm a popcorn person, but it was just far too much sodium.
Oh, boy. Caitlin, yesterday we get to see Ross Stripling do his thing again. We had the discussion earlier in the show about who you might award the team MVP right now if the season ended. I think it's kind of a Manoah Stripling toss-up at this point, for us at least. Would you be in an alignment that those two have kind of been the most consistent MVPs of this team?
Definitely Manoah. I think I'd throw Gausman in there as well. I think he kind of flies under the radar. He's had a weird season in which, like, some of his numbers are incredible, and he's actually, like, one of the best pitchers in the American League, but he's got some tough bounces here and there, and so maybe the wins aren't what you would normally see. But I think that, to me, it's got to be one of the starters, I think, just given, like, the load they carry. And Blue Jays' offense this year has been good, but it feels like it's been like different guys stepping up at different parts of the season, as opposed to like when we saw last year when Vlad was just like pretty much carrying them or like dominant all season long for them when he was the clear MVP of the team. So I would lean towards Manoah. I would throw Gausman in there as well, but then I think Ross Stripling has been, and I don't think they'd be where they are without him. So if there's another kind of role, like if he's like the unsung hero of the team, like I think he's a runaway of that guy, because I mean, he just had to step up. He talked about it a little bit yesterday, just after the game, where it was like, he's just really proud, I think, of himself. And I think the Blue Jays are so impressed with how he was able to so quickly go from the bullpen to a starting role and just maintain just this level of consistency throughout the whole entire season.
Caitlin, I feel like the Blue Jays are going to be in a position where they're just going to have to pay both of these guys. They both have pending contracts. Is there anything you can tell us in terms of where that stands, or just what you think the Blue Jays could or should be doing when it comes to Manoah and Stripling?
Yeah, well, I mean, Manoah is going to still be on like the rookie level contract or whatever it will be, but Ross Stripling will be a free agent. And actually his free agent case is kind of interesting. I mean, he's definitely timed his best season well. I think that he's, I think he's 33 maybe, or turning 33 next year, or it'll be his 33 age season. So it's kind of an interesting dilemma. It kind of reminds me of like where the Blue Jays were last year with Steven Matz in some ways. Like he was, you know, Steven Matz was really solid for them. I think Ross Stripling's honestly been a little bit better. though making fewer starts, at least, I think. But it's kind of one of those things where it's like, do the Blue Jays even, like, contemplate giving him a qualifying offer? Would he accept a qualifying offer? Like, then you're paying a guy, like, for 1 year, like, you know, $20 million plus or whatever it would be. So it's an interesting question. I mean, I think that Ross Stripling, again, has done himself a lot of favors. There's going to be some teams that are going to want him. And just a matter of, like, the Blue Jays are going to have an opening in their rotation, maybe, you know, one or two they need to fill, just depending on what happens with Yusei Kikuchi next year, whether he goes back to the rotation or stays in the bullpen. But the Ross Stripling question is interesting. Like, I would think the Blue Jays are going to consider bringing him back. I think they're always very careful and pragmatic in terms of paying guys, especially guys who are, you know, getting to their mid-30s. But I think someone is going to pay Ross Stripling, you know, a good amount of money per pitch for them, and he's totally earned it.
Caitlin, in your opinion, and I know this has been a pretty recent discourse that's taken off with Stripling's consistency, would you be putting him in that third starter rotation if the playoffs began tomorrow?
It's an interesting question. I think that it would somewhat depend on, like, matchups. I think also, like, Berríos, while he's had some ups and downs throughout this season, lately he's been quite good. You've been relying on him, and we haven't really seen any of those real bad hiccups lately. So, you know, if that continues, I still think it's a fair discussion to have. Again, does it depend on matchups? Does it depend on if they're home or away? We know, like, earlier on in the season, Berríos was really good at home but kind of struggled on the road. I don't off the top of my head know what Ross Stripling's home and road splits are, but I would assume they're probably pretty similar. I don't remember him being, you know, drastically better on the road or at home. He's been kind of like the same guy. So I think it's totally an interesting discussion. I might lean towards Berríos, honestly, just because of maybe the stuff. But maybe if you're in a must-win situation, maybe you're getting creative and using both of them or something. I mean, it's a really interesting question, and I don't think it's one that has, like, a clear answer. I think game one and game two, you kind of know you're going with Manoah and Gausman. Whether, I don't know which one goes one and two, that's maybe a fun discussion to have. But, yeah, game three is really interesting. I think I would still lean towards Berríos, like I said, but I also could be persuaded to use Ross Stripling.
You focused a bit on Vladimir Guerrero Jr. last night, Caitlin, in your story on The Athletic. He hits his 100th home run. He hasn't been in that MVP conversation this season. But I think the 100th home run is an example of, you know, or a reminder, and you had this in your story, that, you know, Vladdy is a very special talent. Do you think that, among other things that we've seen lately, is a sign that he might be turning a corner when things kind of matter the most here in September and October?
Yeah, I mean, I think so. And I think it's important to, A, remind everyone that even if his numbers haven't matched what he did last year, what he did last year was kind of incredible. And, you know, could it be the season, one of the best seasons of his career, honestly. But he's still been very, very good. Like, he's still been a better than league average, significantly better than league average. He's still among the best, if not the best, hitter on the Blue Jays team. He's just so talented that even if he's kind of like struggling, he still racks up hits. He's still probably in the top tier of hitters in the American League in terms of, you know, like hits and RBIs and all, and getting on base and all that kind of stuff. So again, he's still really, really good, but obviously there's still another level with him. And I think you can just look at someone like Bo Bichette, who kind of similarly was not matching what he did last year. And then all of a sudden, like, he's just gone on a tear to open September. His, you know, overall season numbers are now looking very similar to what they were last year. In fact, if he kind of continues on this type of play, which is a lot to ask, he's hitting like, I don't know, no, he was hitting like 500 for a while there. But, you know, if he kind of continues hitting this well or close to it, his end of season numbers are going to look really similar to what they were last year, maybe a few less home runs. But I think with Vlad, like, that, if you look at Bo, it can turn so quickly. And I think Vlad has that talent that he can just come out and just kind of figure it out. Something can just click for him. And I think yesterday's home run was a good sign. Obviously, it was pitched low and in. Maybe we haven't seen him have quite the success on that type of pitch lately, but obviously he can turn on it sometimes. And so if he's starting to hit those pitches out, and then, you know, pitchers are going to have to be more careful with him, and then they're going to throw up, and he likes to hit pitches up because he does damage on them. And so it's just a matter of continuing to adjust. But I think yesterday was a good sign.
So, Caitlin, you wrote an article on September 1st about what the Blue Jays are going to need, keys for a successful September stretch run. So we're exactly halfway through September, and one of them is kind of what we're talking about right now, discovering the offensive firepower. I kind of wanted to go through and get a check on each of them in terms of, are they on the right path, and if so, you know, who's contributed to that. So obviously we just did offensive firepower, but how about the first one that you mentioned was get the best from the starters. From us, it sounds like they're doing that, and they're continuing to have that consistency. That seems like a check mark for box number one.
Yeah, this is good on you for pulling it up, because I would not remember what I wrote.
Oh, I got it all down. We'll go through it.
Okay, good. But yes, no, the starting pitching has been good, and typically any team relies on their starting pitching to get wins, and the Blue Jays in particular, like, when they're at their best, it's because their starters are giving them innings, which just trickles down and makes the whole team better.
All right, number two, stay healthy and grind through. So this is interesting because last night we saw George Springer with the elbow looking like it wasn't up to par. You know, you could barely hold the bat there for a while. But the grind through we saw with Alek Manoah with his flu game. So feeling like maybe we're at about an even in terms of that score?
Yeah, I would say so. I think you've seen, you know, George, maybe also like Vlad, showing some positive signs lately. The home run the other day was a big one. And so maybe you're seeing him come out of it and just kind of figure things out a little bit. And yeah, the stay healthy part, I guess he lost Lourdes Gurriel Jr. Not great, not ideal, but other guys have stepped up. Tapia, Jackie Bradley Jr. have been taking reps. And I think the signs on Lourdes is that it's not a serious injury, and maybe he's back shortly after the 10 days are up. So, yeah, check on that one, I think.
Okay, another one here, Caitlin, is, you know, it seems like an obvious one, and I said this earlier. I was like, wow, I sound like Captain Obvious. But win more games than other wild card contenders.
No, and that is an obvious one, but they're doing a good job with that.
Right. Is there somebody who worries you, though? Like, I know the Mariners are kind of tight. Like, the Jays are atop the wild card right now, but I don't think Seattle's going away.
No, and yeah, like, Seattle, I think I would say, one, I think the Blue Jays have probably done enough that I'm less worried about them falling out of the wild card race. I think at this point, Baltimore is like 5.5 games back of the Jays, and they only have 6 more games against the Jays, so they're kind of running out of room to at least make hay against the Jays. Obviously, there's, you know, things can happen, wild things can happen, but I think the Blue Jays are playing well enough this September that it feels in which the rest of the season is just going to be about seeding of those 3 wild card spots. So I think the big thing is, A, they're doing a good job against the Rays, and if they continue to beat the Rays, then at least they can stay ahead of them. Seattle, I think the big thing with them, and everybody's talked about this, is they just have quite an easy schedule to end the year. Like, they've got a ton of games left against like the Angels and the Oakland A's in their division. So a little bit tougher than the Jays division. The Jays only really have Boston left, I think. That's kind of a layup, or I shouldn't even say layup, because, you know, Boston can still hit sometimes. But in terms of the Jays schedule, like, they still got the Yankees, 3 games against the Yankees, 4 more against the Rays after today. Baltimore is still looming. So, yeah, I think that the Mariners aren't going away. And if I would to have to guess right now, I think it will probably come down to maybe the Jays and the Mariners in terms of 1-2.
So it seems like we're pretty much on a pretty good score for your checklist so far halfway through September. What's the one that you might want to add or focus on the most heading into October?
Yeah, I think maybe it's just getting the rest of the offense going. Like, I think that the offense is going well now, but a lot of the start of the month was really thanks to Bo. He was really carrying them. And when a guy as talented as Bo is, like, hitting 500 and just, like, doing incredible things, and he really can carry an offense, and that's great for the Jays, and they needed it when it came. But I think and lately you've seen good signs from the rest of the offense doing it. Obviously, like, in the game the other day with Whit Merrifield coming in, all those great pinch hit appearances, and then George coming up with the big home run. You saw yesterday Danny Jansen got a few knocks. Vlad got the home run, so maybe you're seeing some good signs from Vlad. So I think I would just say it's about the rest of the offense and everyone starting to click at once. Yeah, maybe Bo's going to carry them a little bit, but if you can get everyone closer to their ceiling or closer to their peak, I think that then you're really talking about a Blue Jays team that could be clicking and it all coming together at the right time.
Well, very, very pleased to see that halfway through September, it looks like your article is kind of, it's faring well. Looking forward to the one for October about keys for a successful postseason run. Thanks, Caitlin.
No problem. Thank you.
Thank you.
Caitlin McGrath, Blue Jays reporter from The Athletic. It was nice to kind of do a look back September. Obviously, when September baseball comes around, everything becomes more important. Everything becomes a bit more full of maybe a little bit of anxiety in terms of this checklist. But going through it, seeming like things are on the right track. A couple texts in about the MVP discussion. I know Caitlin was high on Manoah, and she added Gausman to that, which was something that not a lot of us and not a lot of the text line was really as high on. But we have a question here from Wes, who is on the 400.
Okay.
What were Ryu's stats at the start of the season compared to Ross now? So I responded to Wes, and I said that he had a 5.67 ERA and a 1.33 whip. Wes then responded, he's now on Highway 27. We could be tracking, Wes. For me, that strengthens Ross's case for team MVP. He was put in a position, rose to it, and surpassed expectations. Also, his rally cap voodoo shake definitely helped in comeback a few weeks back. Obviously a witch doctor. I don't know about that part, but it's kind of the narrative that I had as well, Wes, just in terms of the position he was put in, I think amplifies a bit of the MVP conversation. Nobody really expected this to come in and surprise people, but I still think that means we shuffle him a bit into the unsung hero conversation, but we're not awarding that award. So,
yeah, I always think you have to be careful with the process versus result kind of part of this. Like, we're talking about the most valuable player, not like how they became valuable, in my opinion. Like, if you're just looking like totally black and white, like who is the most valuable player to the Toronto Blue Jays, doesn't matter what was expected of them or how they got to that point. Mm-hmm. Like, who is the best guy for this team right now / consistently over the course of the season.
I got another one for you. Two texts here from Dan from the Bridge. Ailish, we were at a cottage last winter playing hockey out back. Massive raccoon comes out of the bushes and sits there watching us for a good hour. No joke, like 5 feet away. Didn't move, just chilled and watched.
Hockey fan.
Yeah, I was going to say, this guy's,
I love raccoons.
Maybe he's scouting.
Super chill.
Then Dan follows back with the question on the MVP. Maybe not MVP, but no one has brought up Kirky. Catches for Manoah, bat on fire, runs the bases like a hungry raccoon.
Oh.
Kirky was certainly in that conversation. He was an all-star.
Yeah.
Like, he was like one of the leading votes for all-star before that break. I think he's cooled off a little bit. Maybe expectations have kind of come down to earth. But
yeah,
you're right. There was certainly a month for giving out monthly MVPs where Kirk deserved that.
For sure. I think it's just for me, and I think Caitlin said it too, like, it's for me, it's got to be a starter just because of...
Or a closer, Jordan Romano.
Yeah. It's like, what if your starting pitching was terrible? It doesn't matter what Alejandro Kirk is doing. If, you know, you're consistently trying to dig yourself out of a 5-0 hole or something like that. You know, so I think the starters set the tone for everyone else. And I think that's what makes them just inherently more valuable to a team.
Someone that kind of seconds this opinion, didn't write their name, but text line 590-590. Manoah for me, but if I had to pick someone else, I would go with Kirk. He's hit well all year, was an all-star, and his defense has been great. And he stepped in for Jansen when he got hurt and did an awesome job. That's true. I like the idea that you're put in the position to help this team unexpectedly. How do you rise to the occasion? Kirk did that. So has Stripling. So there's that narrative as well. Two people texted in back to back here. Vito from Etobicoke and somebody without signing their name. Romano for MVP. Got two votes here.
Okay. I mean, yeah, I agree.
We could just split the award into pieces. Like they did.
Like in Mean Girls?
Yeah.
What were you going to say?
They did that with the Dundies at one point in The Office.
Oh.
Manoa is MVP. Did you see his tweet defending Kirk against the hater? Bento
yes.
from Mississauga. 100%.
That was one of the best things he's done all season. He is an incredible baseball player. Mm-hmm.
If you went on Twitter right now, I'm not going to read these tweets, but...
Yeah, I don't want to give that a platform, you know?
For sure. Alek Manoa went on Twitter last night and defended Kirk from a hater who was way out of line with what he was saying about Kirk. They went in a heated debate. I think the entire internet ratioed this guy deservingly, but Alek Manoa coming on defending his teammate against...
And we both saw that, too, and I think we just kind of understood, like, let's not... put what this guy said out there. Like he doesn't need any more attention for a horrible, poor take.
100%.
And then he kind of walked it back and was like, you're taking this out of context. I'm trying to defend baseball. No, you're not. Just log off.
Just don't, I just would say, don't argue with Alek Manoa. Who is a player on the team. And you're saying that he doesn't know what he's talking about and that he's too narrow-minded to see this guy's approach. Anyway.
That's always a smart thing to do.
Enough of that guy.
Good luck if you ever want to work in baseball.
Two more before we get into something to chew on. Chicken Strips locked down the five spot and played closer to three most of the year. Brett's in line with the conversation this
morning. We like Stripling.
Adam from Pickering.
I will say, sorry.
Don't go.
All I heard was chicken strip, and I thought we were doing the McDonald's conversation.
No, we're not.
McDonald's should have chicken strips on their menu. Mm-hmm. I thought that's where we were going with that. Anyways.
Ryu's bad elbow for MVP. Otherwise, Stripling doesn't get the chance to start and excel. Adam and Pickering.
Oh.
He's got a point.
Yeah.
Next text. I hadn't considered Stripling as MVP until you mentioned about the potential trade deadline implications about needing another arm.
Yeehaw.
I definitely think that was it. I thought about this last night, though, and it wasn't something I thought about during the trade deadline because Stripling was just so dominant and you didn't really think about it. And we were mostly concerned on them not getting what they needed. But in one side of the conversation is that they had him step into that role and they would have had to sell a lot more. Frank, MVP has to be an everyday player, Chapman. Defense is there. He's had the hot bat at times. You love watching him out there on third base. There was a montage a couple weeks ago of his throwing from third to first, and it was beautiful to watch. He does it without question. We'll keep him coming. 590-590. Who would be your MVP of the Toronto Blue Jays season if you had to award it right now? The season ends. Don't think about what's next. Who's going to be your MVP? We'll keep sprinkling them in throughout the day. But it's time for Something to Chew On, brought to you by Great Canadian Meats.
Yum, yum, yum.
This is a very interesting thing I'd like to pose to you, Haley, because you are a fan of Joe Burrow and the Bengals. Mm-hmm. And they lost, of course, in a dramatic fashion. But coming out on the internet yesterday was that a new podcast will be debuting, I believe today, with Joe Burrow and personality Colin Cowherd, who will be hosting a weekly podcast with Joe Burrow. Every single week, they'll be doing this throughout the season. Now, a lot of people are saying this is a terrible idea for the young quarterback to be distracted, to be putting time and effort into this podcast.
Ugh.
And that other quarterbacks will not be doing that.
Okay.
And will that be a cause of some slips or some lack of attention? I'm just saying it could be something to chew on if you're a Bengals fan. Is that something that you're concerned about, what this young quarterback's doing in his free time?
I just think you need to think for a second. Do you really believe that Joe Burrow is putting in any effort to this podcast other than logging in and answering the questions that the host is asking him?
Mm-hmm.
How is that any different than post-game media, practice day media, doing radio interviews, in Cincinnati. Like, these guys have so much time committed to media appearances and different things. The podcast is 35 minutes long. I do not think Joe Burrow is editing this podcast. I do not think Joe Burrow is setting the lineup for this podcast. I don't think he is involved in the production. Like, if your quarterback can't answer some questions for 30 minutes once a week, then I think maybe there's a problem with your quarterback if that's going to be a distraction. Mm-hmm. I love stuff like this. We are constantly talking about athlete personalities and access and wanting, like, value in terms of, like, getting to know these people, not just players. Mm-hmm. And I think there was already a couple snippets from this podcast that are really interesting. I saw yesterday there was a couple clips that came out before the show launched. And, like, you know, little things like this. Joe Burrow said that the front office went to him and basically asked, like, hey, what do you think about us drafting Ja'Marr Chase for you?
Wow.
Like, we didn't know that. And we got this great little mm-hmm. piece of value about the Bengals front office and about the relationship between Joe Burrow and Ja'Marr Chase. Like, that's really cool. I don't have a problem with learning new, interesting information about one of the stars in the NFL. I think if you think that's a bad thing, it's weird. 100%. And if that's a distraction for Joe Burrow, that's bad.
I think the spin on this is right. I think it's actually a really great thing. Maybe Bengals fans are just quick to kind of
who was mad about this?
A lot of people.
Really? But
you never trust the internet in terms of a full wide approach, but I will say that it's a good spin. I actually think that it's great to hear from athletes. If anything, it's nice to kind of hear behind the scenes. As you said, there's also, you know, Josh Allen has a weekly spot with Kyle Brandt. I think Von Miller has a show with Bleacher Report. There's a few athletes doing this, and both those guys are doing fine.
Yeah, I
mean,
think
Aaron
really
Rodgers
cool.
likes to go on and sprinkle his time
yeah.
around.
Yeah, would you rather Joe Burrow go and hang out with Joe Rogan every once in a while? Like, Aaron Rodgers is doing stuff. Aaron Rodgers is going on podcasts. He's maybe not committing to one once a week, but mm-hmm. like, let's not act like these quarterbacks aren't doing stuff.
Pierre from Maple. If anything, the Burrow podcast is a benefit. That's extra time doing his free time that he's thinking about football, regardless of the context.
For sure, and it's building his brand, but it's also good for the visibility for the Bengals and good for the team, et cetera, et cetera. So I don't have a problem with it at all.
Our next guest, he hosts a podcast, an NFL podcast. Hopefully they're not up against each other in the ratings. It's Eric Eager, NFL analyst, next on the Fan Morning Show. Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. It's Haley on her last day this week. Friday for you, baby Friday for the rest of us. Take a look at Haley's work at The Athletic and at Haley Salvian. Give her a follow before she's on her way out here. And as always, it's me holding it down on The Fan Morning Show. Huge Thursday night football tonight. Massive quarterback matchup. I've been excited for this since I saw it on the schedule. Chargers and Chiefs, Mahomes and Herbert. I also have Herbert in my fantasy team, so added incentive for tonight. Let's talk to Eric Eager, NFL analyst at Pro Football Focus and co-host of PFF Forecast Podcast. Good morning, Eric.
Hey, good morning.
How excited are you for tonight's massive matchup between the Chargers and the Chiefs and the quarterbacks going head-to-head?
Very excited. Last week, three primetime games that were all supposed to be good, were all bad. And so it'll be nice to get one that presumably will be good. It's a big test for the Chargers, a team that, you know, last year missed the playoffs in large part because every game came down to the other team having the ball with a chance to win. And last week the Raiders had that opportunity. Luckily for Los Angeles, they were able to get a stop. And then Kansas City probably looked, other than Buffalo, as good as any team in the NFL last week.
Who do you think has the most to prove tonight? The start that Patrick Mahomes had was pretty incredible. I think maybe even under talked about storyline this offseason, but then there's Justin Herbert on the other side, and he seems to be a little bit underrated as well. Who has the most coming into tonight to put on the line?
Yeah, I mean, the Chiefs have hosted four straight AFC title games, you know, won six, you know, the division six consecutive times. Mahomes is an MVP, won a Super Bowl. The Chargers haven't, you know, won the AFC West since 2009. So, and they've made the playoffs, I believe, twice since then. You know, they have a lot. They have the thing to prove, right? They have a great quarterback. A lot of people have him as a top five team in power rankings. And yet we have not seen the output associated with that yet. So they really have the most to prove tonight. But, you know, they've gone into Arrowhead the last two times and won. And, you know, the first time was against the Chiefs backups. But last year was certainly fair and square. So I think they're the team that with the most to prove. And if they win tonight, you're now talking about them in the conversation to the AFC with Buffalo and Kansas City as far as the elite teams in that conference, the conference which is the best conference in football.
This might be an obvious one for you, Eric. If you had to start a franchise today, which quarterback are you choosing? Is it Mahomes or is it Justin Herbert? And it feels like Mahomes is still the obvious choice, but I do think, as Ailish mentioned, Herbert's maybe a little bit underrated in the conversation of elite quarterbacks in the NFL.
Yeah, it's strange. I kind of disagree with the underrated part on Herbert. I think most people are really appreciative of the arm strength and the size and the ability that he has. He also seems like a really charming, you know, charming human and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, the difference, of course, with Mahomes is that, you know, he wakes up every single year hosting the AFC Championship game. So I would still take Mahomes. I would probably take Allen after that, Josh Allen. Two older guys in Brady and Rodgers, and then you're starting to talk about Herbert, I think, in that second category. But Herbert's right in that conversation. If he has a great year, much like Allen did the last few years, then he's right in that conversation with Mahomes. So I think right now it's Mahomes, and then there's a little bit of distance, not much, but a little bit of distance between him and Herbert.
Last week we saw Patrick Mahomes stepping into this new non-Tyreek Hill offense quite seamlessly. Looked like Travis Kelce maybe helped with that being a conversation that just was, you know, that we're moving on from that. Were you impressed with the way that the offense looked with a bit of the shakeups in terms of personnel?
Yeah, their offense had gotten too, you know, consolidated over the past few years, right? It was Hill, it was Kelce. Defenses were forcing Tyreek Hill to play a shorter brand of passing, which kind of hurt him. He had 23 drops the last 2 years. It was time, you know, to stop playing left-handed and to develop a new offense. And, you know, you saw more running early, you saw more running late with that team. You saw Kelce on some more tight end routes, which he, you know, had been playing the backside of trips as a wide receiver for a while. It was a great development. Juju Smith-Schuster looks fantastic. Marquez Valdez-Scantling caught all four passes that came his way. You know, and Sky Moore made a big play as a rookie in his debut. So, they, you know, I think so far, now the Arizona Cardinals defense is bad. So that with that caveat, I think so far they've constructed an offense that, you know, is more robust than the one they had last year.
You know, looking at the other side, Keenan Allen is not going to play in this game, it looks like. How do you think his impact or his absence, excuse me, is going to impact things tonight?
Yeah, I think if you're like a better in this game and you're looking at the Chargers plus 4 points, you know, there's a lot of variance in this game, right? Allen was always kind of the steady, stable guy in that offense. He could get open. He could get, you know, a down payment of 5-6 catches every single game. They're left now with Mike Williams, who's much more of a high variance guy. They throw up those jump balls to him, and he comes down with a fair amount of them. But those are also the plays that could be, you know, they could go 0-for-4 throwing the ball downfield to Mike Williams and, you know, score 10 points tonight, you know. So I think it's high variance. Palmer is going to step in and play in that offense. The wide receiver depth or lack thereof, if you look at the teams that struggled last week, you know, Dallas, Green Bay, wide receiver depth was really the reason why they could not shake it, shake the opponent's defense. That's a sneaky problem for the Chargers without Allen. And, you know, like I said, I think, you know, if Mike Williams is a great game, you know, it could all be, you know, it could all be for naught. But if they throw the alley-oop to him and he can't make plays, the Chiefs might run away with this game.
So Khalil Mack had a pretty great Chargers debut, 3 sacks, 4 quarterback hits, and a forced fumble last week. How do you think this defensive unit works against the Chiefs O-line that didn't allow a single sack in week one.
Yeah, Chiefs might be without Trey Smith, their right guard. At right tackles, their only other weakness where Lucas Niang is recovering from a patella tendon injury. So Andrew Wiley's starting there. Now Wiley has started a lot of games. I think it'll be a good matchup. I think the Las Vegas offensive line is terrible. And so, you got a lot of run by the Chargers defensive line just because their opponent was good. But on the other side of the ball, Arizona, without J.J. Watt, is a pretty terrible defensive line, and the Chiefs were able to manhandle them. So I think it's a test for both units because, the week one test was not very definitive given the opponent. It'll be a big one this week, and it'll be interesting to see Mahomes with an injured left wrist. Will he be able to withstand some of the pressure that is sure to come from a Los Angeles Chargers defensive line?
Moving off tonight's game, Eric, are there any other matchups that you're particularly intrigued or excited for in week two of the NFL season?
I think Monday night, Vikings-Eagles, that's going to be a great game. The market opened with the Eagles as a three-point favorite. People have bet into the Vikings a little bit to make that number more like two. The Eagles, were great offensively against the Lions, scoring 38 points. A.J. Brown set a career high in receiving. It's exactly what you want when you trade a first-round pick for a wide receiver. Defense was shaky, and that's why Detroit was able to come back and almost win that game. So it'll be interesting to see if they can keep the Vikings, down. Kirk Cousins was brilliant in week one, mostly because Justin Jefferson was probably the best player in football against the Packers. So I think whoever wins that game is going to be thought of as an elite team in the NFC at 2-0 with two impressive victories. So that game to me is the one that I'm most intrigued by other than the one tonight.
Okay, so one that maybe seems a bit of a blowout already is Sunday, the Rams and the Falcons, and I know that both are searching for their first win this season. They're definitely in different calibers of play this year, but is it kind of a get-right game for the Super Bowl champs, and did the Bills expose any major flaws maybe that we should be taking a look at on Sunday?
Yeah, it's interesting. The Rams are favored by double digits here, but people bet the Falcons a little bit down. Falcons, didn't win. Ultimately, they Falconian the game that they had against the Saints by losing a two-touchdown lead in the fourth quarter again. But they were very good at the line of scrimmage. They controlled the line of scrimmage, ran the football really well, protected their quarterback. It was things that the Falcons hadn't been doing in forever. But the big thing for me is A.J. Terrell, Casey Hayward are two good corners for the Falcons. And, the Rams really struggled getting the ball to Allen Robinson against the Bills. Cooper Kupp did his thing, as he always does, but you need wide receiver depth in the NFL to have success. So I think the Rams will be somewhat sneaky in this game. The Falcons will be somewhat sneaky in this game. The Rams obviously have the rest, and they have the bounce back from week one. But the Falcons kind of match up well with them. So it'll be interesting to see what happens. I think the Rams win, but I don't know if they win by the margin that the betting markets are predicting them to win by.
Well, it's good to bet against it then, and then maybe we can make some money. Do you have confidence in Trey Lance? He had a rough week one. The Niners have this matchup on Sunday against the Seahawks, who have a red-hot quarterback that nobody expected. What do you take about that game and maybe both of them having a little bit to prove?
Yeah. This is another one with a big spread, but people have bet the underdog, Seattle. San Fran, without Kittle, it's going to be hard for them offensively, especially with the quarterback. Young quarterbacks tend to do better when they have a reliable tight end, Trey Lance. The Niners have scored 10 or fewer points in two games of the last, 45 in their franchise, and Trey Lance has started both of them, and they were two of Trey Lance's three career starts, so it's a tough transition. Do they go to Jimmy G this week if Lance struggles? That remains to be seen. Seattle, that's my issue. Seattle got a big win, but you got to wonder if they ran all the good plays in one game, right? Like Geno Smith had a ton of play action, ton of wide open guys in the first half of that game, and he delivered. In the second half, they barely moved the football. They were really lucky to hang on to that game. The people betting into Seattle, I think they're betting into the first half of that game, when in reality, they gave up a lot of yards to Russell Wilson. They got lucky in the red zone. So I think the Niners win this game. you know, and I don't know if they win it by the margin that the market says, but I do think that they're a comfortable win in this one. I think they're overmatching Seattle, and we're, you know, maybe overreacting a little bit to a really fun performance by the Seahawks on Monday.
You mentioned the Vikings in that matchup coming up on Monday night against the Eagles. I thought the Vikings Packers game last week was maybe entertaining in different ways. But what do you think about Justin Jefferson and maybe the tier of wide receiver that he's in right now and his ability to kind of elevate maybe the Minnesota offense?
Yeah, I think, you know, obviously there are wide receivers you can name in the same category, Cooper Kupp, you know, guys like that, you know, Davante Adams. But I don't think that there's a receiver in the NFL better than Justin Jefferson. I think, like, when you think about getting open, when you think about bailing out your quarterback by catching contested passes, I mean, he's wide open, like, every single play. And, you know, and Kirk Cousins is a good, not great quarterback. You know, you need that sort of margin of error with him, and he gives that to you. Now, you know, the Eagles have James Bradbury and Darius Slay. Like, those guys, I think, are going to be better man-to-man cornerbacks than what the Packers did on Sunday. So it'll be interesting to see how much the Vikings can take advantage there, because, again, on Sunday, whenever they wanted Jefferson, they were able to get him. And if that holds true the whole season, the Vikings are going to be a tough team to beat every single week, because you can just get 15 yards whenever you want to your best player. So it'll be interesting to see. I think, you know, again, the Eagles are going to probably slow them down better with the corners that they have. But it'll be a great game.
Eric, before we let you go, know you're leaving Pro Football Focus soon to join a new startup company called Summer Sports. What do we need to know about that, and how excited are you for this new venture?
Yeah, Summer Sports was started by Paul Tudor Jones and his son Jack, who are just interested in optimizing football, whether that be you know, the roster construction on NFL teams, or even further down the line. The CEO is Thomas Dimitroff, who's the former general manager of the Falcons, and a good friend of mine. So, yeah, I'm excited. I love PFF. I loved everything about PFF and where we've gone. And I think they're going to continue to do great things. But, yeah, I'm excited for this new chance.
How do we follow along?
I'm still on Twitter. I probably have to change my handle, it's supersports.com is where you can look, and we'll I'm sure there'll be some content produced on that website relatively quickly.
Awesome. Well, appreciate you joining us. Best of luck in the new chapter, and we'll chat down the road.
Thanks for having me on. Take care.
Thanks. Eric Eager, NFL analyst at Pro Football Focus, still and co-host of PFF Forecast podcast, but look at Sumer Sports soon down the road, his new venture ahead. I mean, I can't get more excited about tonight's matchup. Personally, I'm looking forward to a little Thursday night football. I missed Thursday night football last week because I was at a wedding in PEI. I didn't get to see my guys.
Lobster.
I didn't get to see my guys really. I mean, I did, but it was streaming basically on a cell phone at a rehearsal dinner. That's what I was doing for the Bills last week, under the table with my cell phone.
That's
shout
nice.
Out Rogers Ignite.
Shout out to the newlyweds.
Yes. Congratulations, Brendan and Aubrey. But I was not able to get into my Thursday night viewing grind. You know, get in there, couch it up, get my popcorn, which you've now told me I can't eat.
No, it's I love salty. Popcorn. I'm talking about
whatever
the press box popcorn.
Yeah.
After eating dinner,
it's even better.
And then immediately eating a large bag of popcorn. It's fine. Do whatever you want.
I will.
I'm just saying.
But tonight, Thursday night football, and the Blue Jays are earlier in the day, which is awesome because you just get a little bit of a time to maybe make your dinner and then sit back down. 8:15 p.m. start at Arrowhead. It's going to be awesome. Chargers, Chiefs. You know what else is going to be awesome, Haley?
What?
Giving away tickets. To the Toronto Maple Leafs preseason game on September 24th at 1 p.m. against the Ottawa Senators. Kicking off their 2022-23 season with high expectations, the Battle of Ontario. All you have to do is tune in today and tomorrow, especially those are your last options. Listen for the code word and text it in, 590-590. Today's code word. Everybody ready? Tavares. Text Tavares to 590-590 for your chance to win Leafs preseason tickets to the September 24th 1 p.m. game. There's two of them that day. 1 p.m. game against Ottawa Senators. Tomorrow is your last chance to win. Tavares, 590, 590. Look at them piling in the text line.
Are they being spelled correctly?
Incorrect.
This time?
Traverse. It's not Traverse City.
It's not who texts in first, right? It's
I don't know the rules, to be honest, but
I feel
all
like
I know
you guys have time to
it right
spell
helps.
It correctly. Like if you take an extra second and spell Tavares instead of Travers.
That's actually, you know what? T-A-V-A-R-E-S, in case you don't know, because the first three to text in currently have nuts. Travesty was just texted in.
The Travesty. Autocorrect doesn't want you to win.
I know it's tough. We wish you well. Spell it correctly. 590, 590. You want to go to the Leafs preseason kickoff against the Senators. Go get them. Couple more texts and text line before we take a break about team MVP options. If you're handing them out today for the Toronto Blue Jays, and we're going to ask our next guest after the break, but this is some more of our loyal listeners. MVP Romano, he has set the tone for the bullpen. Remember last year how the bullpen cost them in the playoffs? Andy.
Hmm?
That's good perspective.
Yep.
Because there was certainly some issues down the stretch where the playoffs slipped away from the grasp of the Blue Jays because of some pitching. Andy brings a good point. Romano. We got another vote for him. Chris from Barrie says, it's got to be Chapman for MVP. Quiet, good numbers. Defense is unmatched, can count errors on one hand. Not to mention, does no one remember what a dumpster fire third base was for a while?
Sure.
I think that...
add it to the list.
It's tough with Chapman because... Yeah. The point that Chris makes is quiet, good numbers, right? And it's easy to just go with who's hot, who's
loud,
numbers, who's in your face in terms of MVP. And Manoah is that guy. You know, you can't go a day without, or a start without Manoah having some sort of increased chapter to this season that is just more outstanding than the last. He just had his flu game. Like, it's tough to see.
It is like performance and impact
and
matches the loudness. It's not just like, there's a ton of noise around Alek Manoah, but he's actually not that good. Like, it's loud for a reason with Alek Manoah. But I get the Chapman one, too. Again, this is a good problem. This is a good... the fact that there's so many people adding in different names with a legitimate case to be made for them, that's not a bad thing for the Toronto Blue Jays to have multiple guys bringing consistent positive value to the ball club.
One more from Mark from Durham before we take a break. Keep them coming at 590, 590. You can text in our code word and then also text in separate texts who you think is going to be, if you are handing them out today, the Toronto Blue Jays MVP. Mark from Durham, MVP has to be Bo. He plays a premium defensive position up the middle and has hit for this team every day player. Next would be Chapman. I think you get some disagreements with the everyday player. Just, I think maybe some recency bias, Mark. It has been an incredible September for Bo. But I think if we went back and listened to podcasts from a month or so ago, not just us, on the station, if you went through and looked at the Twitter feeds, I think a lot of people were really down on Bo. Trade Bo.
He was not an MVP.
He was not an MVP candidate. I think it's easy to say he's certainly maybe the league MVP right now in this stretch, but season-wide, that's tough, Mark from Durham. Appreciate the text in. Let's take a break after we're going to talk to Jeff Blair, who's driving in for Blair Barker right now. Who's he giving the Blue Jays MVP award to right now, if he had to? That's next on The Fan Morning Show with Haley and Ailish, Sportsnet 590 The Fan.